It's Monday, October 2nd, 2006, and you're listening to episode 21 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 2 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and today I have with me Chad.
Hi.
Dawn.
Hello.
And Adam.
Hey.
Which we just introduced Dawn and Adam really out of order there, but that's the way you chose to sit.
Really? So. We sit like this every week.
Yeah, I think
I do. Like the last 5 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's been the same way.
I guess I'm just so busy over here, you know, hosting and doing the show that I don't notice all these little things like where my peons arrange themselves.
We agreed on Mike Ninjas.
Mike Ninjas.
I thought you guys actually had another name in there somewhere, but Mike Monkeys or something.
It's Mike Ninjas.
All right. Well,
up in your ivory tower, you might not have gotten this memo, but yeah.
The common peasantry,
yes. We're Mike Ninjas.
Postage costs a lot to get it up there.
Yes,
so.
It does.
All right. Well, later this week, we are going to be at Archon here in Collinsville, Illinois, just across the river from St. Louis. If you are interested in coming at last minute, you can find information at archon.org, archon.org, and that's going to be October 5th through the 8th, and we don't have the details quite hammered out, but we do have a sketch of what we think the panel times are going to be for our panels, which are posted on our website at feartheboot.com. So stop by and check those out, and even if you're not interested in the panels, you can still always stop by and just say hi, drop us a line, stop by our forums, and start chatting with other gamers or, you know, whatever floats your boat. Now, at Archon this year, Adam, you and Melina, who you listeners may remember from the Ladies Podcast, episode 10, are going to be doing a protest. Do you want to tell us about this protest?
Last year, the Zombie Squad, the group at Archon, the militant group that tells you how to defend yourself against zombies and is on the big Kill the Undead crusade.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the Zombie Squad, they're a group that goes around to cons and such, basically passing out kits and material on how to survive the coming zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. They all act. I mean, it's totally serious, too. Yeah, they are in character.
They were in full riot gear last year.
Yeah, they've got, well, for the cons, they have fake guns, but I'm sure they have real ones, too, and stuff. But they're awesome.
They do. They deadpan the whole thing. And, of course, there's people out there just don't get the joke and, like, these people are crazy. This, that, and the
other. Well, yeah, they're crazy.
Like, yeah, that's the fun.
All right, so go on.
Well, anyway, last year, Melina staged a protest for the ethical treatment of zombies, and they held signs and sang songs outside of one of their panels. This year, she's planning a bigger protest. She's got a guitarist, and she's organizing. She's even put up a website.
Even got a zombie, too.
She does even have a zombie. She captured one. She's going to let it go.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, symbolically, like a dove from
like
a cage.
A dove. So she's called a zombie.
And the website address for that is www.hafu.org, which is HAFU, Human Advocates for Undead.
So if you are sick and tired of the horrible media stereotypes surrounding zombies,
indeed,
the way they're just shown is interested in nothing but brains, or you want to come out and protest the people that are attempting to kill them, then log on to HAFU.org.
I agree with neither HAFU nor Zombie Squad. I believe in a two-state zombie solution.
Really?
Well, you don't have a website.
Not yet.
So if that's your thing, then HAFU.org, and hopefully you can make it out to Archon to join the protest.
She's always looking for volunteers.
They're going to have like a guy playing hippie protest songs on a guitar, and they're going to have signs and all that good stuff you'd expect with a protest. So.
Yes, a special thanks to Renaissance Wolf on the forums for making a lot of images for us. He's wonderful and dead sexy.
All right. Now, about 2 weeks ago, we started a contest for the best regular Joe character, the reverse of the freak show character, someone who is something so normal and so boring that a player's handbook would not even really cover this character concept.
Boring, but intriguing.
Yeah. And I guess I should say boring in concept, not in execution, because as I've said several times before, I can look around the table with any game I play or whatever, and there's people that are very interesting and I really enjoy talking to. But
well,
none of
thank
them.
You.
But none of them are.
None of them are here.
None of them are here. No, none of them are.
Ooh, stick.
None of them are dragon wizard knights. You know, they're all just regular guys. So we put this out. We got a bunch of entries, and just like with the Freak Show character contest, we had quite a few that were really good. You guys did a great job, so pat yourselves on the back, but obviously we have to pick one winner. And the winner we are going to pick is W. McDuff. You can find his post on our forum, who gave us an entry for a lady or a girl who is a scribe. He describes this character talking about how she starts off by spending a lot of time in a library, and based on that came to love the stories and came to be kind of a colorful woman and such. So if you want to check that out, please do. But what we are trying to drive home with this contest, once again, is that you don't have to use the concept of the character to make the person interesting. I mean, you yourself are an interesting person, but once again, you are not a dragon wizard knight. So, And I'm not saying don't play those things. I know some people would argue that's why they play a role-playing game, is for that escape or the chance to be something different.
Yeah, why am I playing a secretary when I'm a secretary five days of the week?
Which is a valid point, but even if you want to play the dragon wizard knight, don't stop there in terms of looking for depth. That you can make a character who is so much more interesting than that if you just keep pushing beyond the concept and make them interesting for the same reason a real person is interesting. That adds something to the fact that they're an outrageous concept to begin with. So This is a useful exercise, even if this isn't your cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, thanks everybody. And
thank you.
In a couple of weeks, we'll come up with something else to get you guys in on. On our forums, we've had some people talking, and this is, I don't know, it's quite a debate. Maybe it is, but it's more of a discussion going about the use of romance in games.
Mm-hmm.
And the debate is whether romance has a place in role playing games or not. And kind of, I guess, let me pitch this from both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, and I think how this discussion started was somebody asked, have you ever played a character in a role-playing game of another gender? Then they went from that to saying, have you ever, within a role-playing game, had any kind of a romance that involved at least on one side a player character? Not like you have two NPCs that are in love or something, but you have a player who is in love with an NPC, or two players whose characters are in love with each other, or whatever. And we really have not.
Yeah.
In fact,
I haven't.
Well, before we came to this sit-down to do this, we were talking about this at the restaurant. We actually didn't go to Stumpy's this week.
Much too hard to say. Guess who got to decide where we went?
Yay, pizza.
But we were talking about this. And in gaming, for about 16 or 18 years now, I can only think in my entire history of gaming of two romances we had. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games we have played, I can only think of two. And the reason we have typically shied away from them, I guess there's a couple reasons. One, they can just get distracting from the game.
Right.
And I realize some people make the argument, and I don't entirely disagree with this. So I guess, let me preface this by saying, it's going to sound like, as I talk about this, I'm just 100% against romance in games.
No, that's me.
Yeah, and that, I won't lie to you, that view is present in this room. That's not my view. I see romance in games the same way that I see a freak show character. I think you can make it work. I think it can be good in a game, it can enrich a game, but to me I think it's an uphill sell.
Right.
That there are so many possibilities where it can go wrong or detract from the game that I would almost say if you're unsure, you're better off not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Reason number one is, as I said, it gets distracting. And Chad, you were commenting this was your big concern because you have, let's say, a group of four or five people.
Yeah, my problem with it is that you have a group of five people or six people, you have a role-playing game group here, and everybody is interacting with the plot, and you have two people who their characters form a romance. Well, that means you're going along, doing the story, doing the combat, doing the plot, doing the adventure, and then everything stops. And just those two characters have to role play out their thing, their romance together. And everybody sits there for 15 or 20 minutes while these two people look longingly into each other's eyes and sigh. And I guess the argument can be made, well, they can do that while they role play. They can incorporate it into their role-playing game. But you know what? There's times when they can, and then there's times when they can't. Like when they have to go off on a date or something together. It separates the group a bit. It puts divisions into the group. Not opposing divisions.
So are you saying it's more or less the same as two characters being in argument or disliking each other?
No.
Whoa!
Well, I think with the
little foreshadowing. That's four topics at once!
I think when it's an argument, no.
Just to explain to the listeners the series of jokes there, the next two topics we're going to talk about in this podcast is foreshadowing followed by in-game fights. So,
yeah, I added a fourth one there on there that I'm really not sure what that was.
Yeah, there's three topics up there. I have no idea what the fourth one is, but
it's the shadow topic.
All right, so continue.
Well, with an argument, not so much, because an argument kind of comes and then it goes. And then other people can jump
in.
Well,
you can say the same thing about a relationship.
No, I think that I'm talking like a short-term relationship could last over the course of time, whereas an argument is just in the moment. You know, it doesn't really detract from the game because it only happens
once.
Sometimes
you get characters that just really hate each other.
But, well, that's different.
That's what I'm saying, though.
No, well, I was also going to say that you have an argument, that's just a separate thing, so that's not a big deal. You have two characters who hate each other, that's different.
Yeah. And okay. I don't want to topic jump here, so I'm just going to mention this real quickly. But I kind of see where Dawn's coming from in that I think there's a lot of things in a game, fights being one of them, that can over the long haul detract from the game if they become too big of a feature in the role-playing. And I think romance dangerously has that potential. Because, Chad, like you're saying, that this is typically going to be something that over time intensifies, mm-hmm. not something over time that's going to just come and go. Well, fights can be the same way. But once again, I would say this is just why they're dangerous. This is not a guarantee. I'm sure there's people out there that have role-played a romance who have kept it more organic to the game.
And, well, with characters hating each other, and again, not to get too deep into this point because we're going to hit it later on, with characters who hate each other, you can get other characters in on that. With two people who love each other, unless you're getting into the sex part of it.
Actually, that takes us right to what my second concern is, which is a natural part of relationships, of course, is the sexual aspect. Mm-hmm. And if you see it once again that just as a relationship's part of life, and so why not include that in the role-playing game? Well, so is the sex aspect. But every time I've ever seen any game where that sex aspect was drawn in, whether anyone wanted to say it or not, I'm sorry, but it struck me when I have seen it that they were getting off on it.
Right.
That, you know, this was their way of acting out.
It's kind of titillation.
Some kind of titillation that, for whatever reason, they're acting out through the game. And that they weren't role-playing a really serious romance so much as they were just playing a bunch of horny teenagers.
Yeah.
Which is a completely different level of depth.
And you know what? Some people are really into that. I think that a lot of Vampire the Masquerade games are based around that sort of titillation or that sort of sexuality. I mean, because that's part of the whole vampire, you know, feel is that it's the sexuality and the dark romance with it. If you really have the whole gaming group into that sort of thing where everybody's playing the sort of
horny teenager?
Yeah, or dark. If you want to put a positive spin on, you know, the sort of romance thing or romantic characters, that would be different.
The reason, though, you could say that it would work in a vampire game is, and this is a stereotype thing, I'm sure there's exceptions to this, you run your game any way you want, but typically...
Can I?
Yeah, you can. When you're talking about the Anne Rice-type vampire romance, it's never a very serious or very deep romance. That it's usually kind of this combination love-hate relationship, or it's you pick someone up, you do your thing with them, you put them in the background as an accessory to your life.
Well,
and
that's kind of getting into like the Laura K. Hamilton type vampire romance where there's not really any romance. It's just the vampire hunter falls in love with the werewolf, but she's having sex with the half-breed vampire mage.
My issue with this whole thing is I'm not playing a role-playing game to play a romance.
Right.
If I wanted a romance, I'd go watch a romance movie. Not that that would ever happen. And the whole thing is that the GM writes an adventure story. He does not write a romance story. And then you create this whole situation that's, I don't know, he didn't plan for it. And you brought your character to the game. You control your character. And now he doesn't control everything.
My big thing, though, is just if I'm part of a group and we're playing, say, D&D, and we're playing an adventure with political intrigue, it's not like a romance, dark, sensual story. If we're playing that, I don't want to sit there and watch two other people role play out a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. It's just boring.
We're here to kill the dragon, not to watch what's-his-face and what's-her-face get down and dirty.
Yeah.
Well, let me throw out one other point and then kind of take the counter side of this and talk about a few of the things I have in favor of romance in games, which they're not that many, but like I said, I think you could make it work. The third and final problem I have with romances and role-playing games
is rolling to suck face with another dude.
Well, yeah, exactly. When I sit down to play a role-playing game, you can look at there's three kinds of people that I'm typically playing with. And this is me. Your group may be different. Mm-hmm. It's a real female, but this is somebody else's wife or girlfriend.
Right.
And this just makes things really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's working out the details of a relationship, a romantic relationship, mm-hmm. possibly a sexual romantic relationship with somebody else's wife or girlfriend.
Right.
And, you know, I think we're comfortable enough with each other and trust each other enough that this wouldn't be a huge issue.
Yeah.
But that still creates a kind of uncomfortability and just kind of an awkwardness.
Well, yeah. I mean, if one person in this sort of circle that you're making with this, if one person isn't really strong in their relationship,
exactly,
then that could cause problems.
I can think of people, none that are here on the mics right now, but I can think of people right now that would have huge problems
right.
with this very exact thing. The second type of person that I would be gaming with is someone who's a female who I'm in a relationship with, which at which point the game just kind of becomes a spillover of our real life flirting,
right.
which just detracts from the game, because the fact is, I'm not role playing a relationship. I'm really making Google eyes at a real person and just trying to give that some kind of an excuse in game to keep it going.
Yeah. Well, I already have a relationship with this person. I don't need a second one. Jesus, yeah. The first one's more than enough work for me.
You're so lucky she doesn't listen to this.
The third kind of person would be a guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's role-playing, but I just can't...
Oh, you're supposed to distance yourself from that. So
yeah,
when
sure.
So when you've fallen in love... Your character's fallen in love with this beautiful woman. You've decided to get married, and you're looking down at your paper, and you're writing out this love poem that you're about to icily pass this person. You look up, and there's Ted with his beard
yeah.
and his fat beer gut and his being a man. I mean,
and I guess the
let's just mention that the majority of the people we play with are heterosexual. So this is nothing
actually,
against
you know what?
Our gay listeners.
To bring up an interesting point on that, I mean, I'm going to make grossly stereotype here,
sure.
but we, since I've been gaming in our group chat,
mm-hmm.
we've never had a romance in the game, and all of our games have been the majority female.
Right.
That
right.
is a very bizarre situation, I would think, which mm-hmm. is atypical of most gaming groups.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I should throw out there the fourth type of person would be a single female, but I've not gamed with that many single females, so I just...
Yeah.
And even then, it strikes me that...
Do they exist?
Well,
yeah.
it strikes
we
me that
we
it'd
have.
Be
yeah.
hard
yeah,
not to see that, though, as still kind of a in-game flirting. In fact, the two times, as I was sitting there thinking about romances and games, the only two romances I can come up with that ever occurred in our games, I mean, once again, like 18 years of gaming, was when two people were real-life flirting and just using the game as a spillover of that.
Okay, who were those two people?
This is going to disgust me because I already know the answer.
Well, okay, I'll put you this way. They're on the mics, and it's not me or Adam.
It was me and you, wasn't it?
It was. Adam and I just couldn't contain our boundless love.
It was sweet.
The second time was in a Star Wars game. There was an NPC that my character had captured. They started arguing, and just over time, kind of built this rapport. And from an IC standpoint, if you were to go down the kind of bullet points of the sort of person this character would want, this NPC fitted very well.
Right.
But nothing ever developed there. We never role-played out a romance. It's just everyone sitting around the table is kind of like, yeah, if these were two real people, these guys would probably be getting together just because they've mm-hmm. hit all those bullet points. And I guess the one thing I would say before I switch over and kind of take the plus side of this is a parting shot on the negative side. I know some people say, well, you know, this is a part of real life. And within a role-playing game, we role-play, and we're certainly big advocates of role-playing all these detailed parts of a character's life. Why would we suddenly want to rule out romance, which is a huge motivator and a major part of real people's lives?
Right.
But I think everyone has that level of selectiveness in their role-playing. For example, the last time you were doing a dungeon crawl where you spent 3 days down an Undermountain, your GM may have asked you, what are you guys eating? I guarantee you at no point did he ask you, what exactly is your bathroom arrangement?
Right.
And you know, nobody deals with the fact that when you're
okay,
barbarian...
check your inventory. Who brought the toilet paper?
Yeah, I mean, and nobody deals with the fact that when your barbarian goes into a barbarian rage, he goes into hypertension and has a heart attack. You know, we all have this kind of selective distance in terms of life function or cultural function or social function between real life and the game. And for us, just as we think that cardiac arrest and defecation and all these other things, dental problems and whatever, mm-hmm. just are not worth dealing with in a role-playing game, we think that the problems that surround dealing with romance in a game, at least for us, outweigh anything you would get in terms of added depth by bringing them in.
Right. I am not 100% against romance in a role-playing game, but I think that the romance has to fit the setting or has to fit the feel that the game is conveying. And I think the ultimate stereotype of this is Vampire the Masquerade. Again, it's vampires. It's meant to be dark and sensual. I think you could make it sexual.
Right.
Darkly romantic and that sort of thing. And you could also do that in D&D. You could make a style of game that is romantic and that sort of thing if all the players are down with it and have that be an aspect of the game. My problem is that when you're doing a different kind of game that doesn't have that, and the players and two players just decide to start doing that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You're on the field. You're in your battle mech. I jump in front of the laser because that's my loved one.
Oh.
What are you doing?
I gag. That's what I do.
Decides that, oh, are you interested in sexual favors? Yeah. And you're like, no.
And I guess let me take the other side for a few minutes here. I put this, as I said before, in the same category as free show characters, where I think if you, first of all, Chad, as you suggest, put it within the right context of the game. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you make sure that it is not distracting from the game, that this is not real-life ogling that's just spilling over into the game. This is not constantly requiring the separation of the party while you guys go on a date.
Right.
And I think also, you know, if you don't use this as some excuse for titillation during the game, but I think
unless the GM and all the players are down
that's what
and
you're
want
into,
that,
I guess. I mean, but
sure,
you know, but
that's not a group I want to be a part of.
No,
because I have to give some.
I'm not going to comment on those kind of people.
I thought I'd just put that out there on the table in case anybody was curious.
I have to though give some props to the argument that this is a major part of real life, and so why not include it in the game? And I gave kind of a downside to that, but on the upside, I mean, that is true. Love is a huge motivator of the human existence, as is sex. And so, yeah, in a sense, you are kind of denying a very real part of your character by not bringing those in. That if you think about it, in 18 years of characters, with very few exceptions, our characters are asexual and completely disinterested in any kind of meaningful relationship. And they've got their buddies and the people they live and die with, but they have no interest in finding a wife or having kids.
Well, they're too busy adventuring.
Yeah, exactly.
The dragon needs killing. There's no time for dating.
You know, no, I've had characters where, you know, this stuff is already built into the background.
Yeah.
You don't really you don't reference it because you're out adventuring it.
Yeah, I've played characters who were married or had kids and that sort of thing. But,
we've had that too. I'm trying. There was a game I was running a while back where our friend Mike, he had a character who was married, but his wife and it was a space game, so they were out in the galaxy flying around. His wife and kid were back on Earth. And
I think that even two players can be married in Icely. You know,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
like a husband and wife team.
You keep it in context and keep it in scope of the game.
Well, then I'm going to get into the argument that a husband and wife aren't romance.
There's a very big
difference between dating and husband and wife.
Yeah, they're not the romance is how we're defining it in a game of, you know, the husband and wife. If you have two players and they're playing a husband and wife type situation and they're sitting there and they're just the two of them are going off on dates or, you know, distracting the group or ogling each other or constantly flirting to the point of distraction.
It's clear that these two people have never been married.
Yeah, it's the same. Well, that. And it's the same thing as boyfriend and girlfriend. You go back to that circle again. But, yeah, I think that players can be married and stuff. But it just depends on how you play it up and the context of the game and the gaming group.
Our next topic on the board, and hopefully not our last, looking at the time here, we may be on target yet again to tell you we have all kinds of topics and then end up pushing half of them off to next week.
You know what? That's a good thing.
This actually took longer.
Yeah, I guess it is a good thing because it's a sign that we're doing pretty well at these topics. All right, so let's move on to our next topic. I got an email from someone saying that he likes to run games that, or is preparing to run a game, that's kind of a horror mystery sort of game. And what he wants to be able to do is to use things like visions and dreams to kind of foreshadow his plot or to move the characters along or give them little hints of things to come. And he was asking, how should he do that? Could we offer any practical advice on making that work? Thinking about this myself, because I have used foreshadowing and dreams and visions myself throughout games.
I use dreams and visions in damn near every single game I run. I love that thematic tool.
I do too. I absolutely do too. And I think it adds a real sense of mystery and wonder because you can hint at something in terms of a character might imply he's a bad guy, no one's sure, but typically the group won't give that a whole lot of thought. But if you stop and give them this really weird dream that has like skeletons drowning in a pond or something, they're going to think about that.
Whoa. I've been in both of your games with these.
I can't breathe.
I say A+. Plus.
Yeah. So, I also love, sort of related to this too, is like you have insane characters, and Adam has provided me with this a couple of times. Very grateful for. You have insane characters, and the insane characters have, like, hallucinations. And then you just kind of twist those hallucinations around to where they're kind of in line with your plot. And it makes really cool effect.
Let's talk about, thinking about this, I came up with two possible areas where foreshadowing can go wrong. I guess maybe three. One is they can just be outright cheesy.
Yeah, you're playing a modern-day game with absolutely no supernatural aspect in it whatsoever. And you're playing, like, you're playing a warfare game where you're playing the 1st Marine Division in Iraq going through Baghdad, and suddenly the entire platoon starts having visions. No, that's a poison gas attack. That's not visions.
The second possibility where I can see this going wrong.
Just moving straight along.
Is the dream can be, or the foreshadowing can be, either so obvious that it becomes meaningless, that you dream that this guy's actually a bad guy, and well, it turns out he actually is a bad guy.
Too much information.
Or so cryptic and obscure that by the end of the game, when the campaign's over, they've answered every mystery of the game. They still have no freaking idea what this was about. The third place, and I think this right here is probably the bigger threat, the one we need to talk about more, because I honestly think the previous two are really issues just of good writing than anything else. We'll talk about them a little bit. But the bigger area where I see this going wrong is you have committed yourself to a future in the plot. Mm-hmm. And just as anything else in the game can go wrong, this whole thing could get knocked off course. And all of a sudden this foreshadowing, I mean, you can say, well, the future's malleable and we just change the future, which is, I guess, an acceptable answer. But if you really want these foreshadowed dreams or visions to consistently be meaningful, you can't take that quick out.
Right.
You have to make them apply. So that's the bigger problem I want to talk about.
Well,
avoiding.
That's also why I make the visions that I give the players and stuff, dreams or whatever, very general, very vague, so that I can't necessarily trip up on them later on.
Well, let's talk about that. Do you have an example of a game where you used a vision or foreshadow or dream or whatever, and we can walk through the process of how we actually made this happen?
You're going to ask me a tough one here because I hadn't thought about this. But
I can give one if you're stuck.
Generally, the kind of, because I can't think of an exact example off the top of my head, unless Adam, you can think of one that I did.
No.
But the format of what I would do, so to speak, is it would be something like it's a medieval game. They're in a castle. And there is a evil cult that is doing basically bad things.
Evil.
They're doing their evil around. But the players don't know about it. And I might have one of the players who could be a mage or is somehow the target of the cult or is somehow, he just is a random guy who has a dream. And he is having this dream for a specific reason, even if that reason is the player will never know. That only I will know why. Goes to sleep, and he has a dream, and I start describing the dream. And I generally don't give the player any interaction in the dream. I don't allow the player to move around and stuff. Because to me, in a dream, you don't really have control of yourself. You're doing things, right? But you don't really choose to do things necessarily. So, and anyway, I would have, like, they would be part of the sacrifice, or the cult would be doing a ceremony, and maybe they would be the cultist leader for some weird reason, and changing it. You start altering it and making it surreal, like the walls are melting, or this cult thing is going on in a black void, and there's no floors and walls, and everything's just floating there, and the cult members are kind of floating up and down in this void, right? And you know, you put atmosphere to it. You make it spooky.
And
you make it very general.
What did this in the far long end, foreshadow, rather? What did this?
Well, the fact that there is evil powers, you know, uh-huh. As the game master, is that it nudges them in the direction that I want
them
to start looking.
It strikes me, though, what you're describing does an excellent job of setting theme and tone.
Right.
But it's really not a true foreshadowing, because, of course, there's evil in the game. Otherwise, they wouldn't be
playing.
Well,
no, I mean, it's like, say... Say the evil.
I think Dan's looking more for the guy who goes to bed one night, knows he's having a battle, and he sees himself die in battle the next day, type of thing.
Right.
Or sees somebody else
die.
Well,
with me, it's more like if the great evil is a dragon, I'm not going to have them dream about a cult that has nothing to do with the dragon, right. just to give the atmosphere of evil. Like I said, the main bad guys are this shadowy figures of a cult. Very, very vague. Very vague. It just kind of nudges them. It gets them thinking in a certain way and kind of gets them thinking of what they should be looking for. And, you know, and I'll drop more specific examples, too. A lot of people use items like the cult leader has a jeweled dagger that you see, and he's about to kill you with it because you're the sacrifice. And then in town later on, you see a guy with a jeweled dagger. I don't do that because to me that's too heavy-handed.
Yeah, I found something that works that has helped me. It is harder, and I'm going to get to this in a second, but it's harder to foreshadow events because events are changeable, meaning that if I foreshadow that so-and-so is going to die in a battle, and then the following day, you know, something else happens, this character dies because a bus runs him over in the street,
That's a crappy role.
Yeah, I've kind of lost that event, and that's kind of a weak example, because you as the game master just have the bus not be there, but, you know...
Well, that's also a really kind of clumsy foreshadowing in the first place, but it's just an off the...
That kind of, like,
example.
But to me, that breaks the vague rule.
But what I have found, though, that works really well is to instead foreshadow facts. Because facts don't change. Let me give you an example. There was a Star Trek game, and this was the one where, going back to the ladies' podcast again, this is where Carla played her Betazoid. And they were on this planet, and there was this extremely powerful creature. There was a civilization. I'm not going to bore with all the details. There's a civilization there. And there was this extremely powerful creature that would show up every so often and attack this civilization, just kind of walk in and start, you know, doing all kinds of things to stir stuff up, and the crew, who was technologically a lot more advanced than this race they were with, would do things to drive it off. Well, Carla's character, being a Betazoid, had some kind of psychic or psionic ability, and so she was a lot more kind of in tune with the motions and stuff of the planet, and I gave her a vision where she saw this same city that they were in, but the streets were all flooded with this river of blood, kind of like Venice, except instead of water, it was just full of blood. And there were people that were standing along the banks that were standing by these stacks of corpses. And one by one, they were picking up these corpses and throwing this into this river, which was flooding downstream. And she asked one of these guys, and I let her control her character, and she asked one of these guys, you know, why are you doing this? What's going on here? They said, well, I have to keep feeding, and if I don't feed it, we're all going to die. And she kind of looks down this river of blood, and at the center of town, grossly oversized, I mean the size of a building, is this creature who's lying there asleep, and these rivers of blood are just kind of flowing into it. Well, what they found out way later in the plot was what this creature actually was it was the last remnant of the civilization that rightfully belonged there. And its genetic code was actually a compilation of the individual genetic codes of all the final generation of this race, which it was meant to revive, but this other race had moved in and taken over the town. And so this dream kind of foreshadowed what this creature was, which was a combination of the dead. And unlike an event, that's unchangeable.
Right.
Even if they find some way to vaporize this creature 3 minutes into a five-sitting campaign, this thing is still what I showed in the dream that it was.
And, you know, that reminds me, too, of another thing that you can do with dreams and foreshadows is, especially if you're playing a supernatural game, the main bad guy of your game can enter your dreams or give you visions, or he's basically threatening you or doing things like that.
I had another example. We were playing a sci-fi game. Tim, who was on some of the earlier podcasts, he wanted to have within him, he wanted to give me a mystery to work with. So he wanted to have in him this like intelligent symbiote that could not talk to him or anything, was just in him. And they were running around throughout the course of this campaign trying to help this old man accomplish a bunch of things. And what they didn't know was this old man was actually evil and was using them to accomplish all kinds of horrible things. And Tim would have these visions or these dreams. He'd be sitting like in this great big church. He was the only one in there all by himself. And this creature was sitting there 3 inches from his face just screaming at him and condemning him and hellfire and brimstone at him. This was foreshadowing the fact that he would ultimately find out that what he was doing, though he didn't mean to be, was an evil action. The fact that he was sitting alone signified the fact that the symbiote was trying to tell him this through dreams, but he was the only one that could hear it. Once again, I was foreshadowing a fact, not a specific event.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk for a minute. Let's say that somebody, for whatever reason in their game, really wants to foreshadow an event. That, let's say, their character is ultimately, in order to make it through the game, he's going to have to kill his own father. Okay, I'm just making this up on the spot. And we want to foreshadow that exact act, not foreshadow your father's a bad guy. But just
not foreshadow like going into a swamp and climbing under a tree. And,
right, right. Yeah, exactly. Sorry. There's no little green Muppets helping you through this one.
Oh, okay, good.
But foreshadowing, much less little green CGIs. So, but foreshadowing, let's say that exact event. I think the biggest threat you got to watch out for there when you do this is not painting yourself into a corner, is setting up an event that actually never comes to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things you have to do before you do that is be sure your GMing's in line in general. We talk about in an earlier episode what to do when players break your plot, that you meant for the game to be about them fighting the evil Baron, but then one setting into it, they kill the evil Baron or they
leave town.
Leave town. Or
like,
whatever.
Whoa, that evil Baron is just too much.
An older sister, and she's even more evil.
That evil Baron sucks. We're getting out of town.
So I would say part of the advice I'd have here is the same as that, is have good control of your plot and don't foreshadow anything that is so train tracky or so railroaded. You have no flexibility left in the plot. For example, someone was going to say, I have to eventually kill their father. Well, the nice thing about the father is if you as the game master can keep them generally out of the plot, they have no risk of dying. The father is obviously mobile. He can walk around, so he can show up at any convenient point in the plot to pop up
die.
And push one of the characters until they have no choice but to kill him. And of course, if the characters won't play ball, that no matter what you do, this character will not kill his father, that's when you as the game master get clever. You can basically do something like they're in this building and they're trying to get out, and so to get out they have to pull this lever which opens some doors and locks another, and as they're running out they run past one that has like a little glass window slit, and through it they can see they just blocked their father in there and now he's burning to death or something and banging on the door to get out. But so I think
they're pointing and laughing and
the advice
it's nice to meet you. Move me outside.
It's starting to sound like this podcast has father issues.
Shut up. I like my dad. My dad's awesome.
I do too. I like my dad too, but
not that we're being defensive.
I just go, I don't know, it's just such a common theme in fiction that
father figure issues.
So
yeah.
I guess that's why it comes to mind so readily. Killing your own mother just has such a much more abusive tone to it for some reason.
She's your mom. She's worked hard enough.
Yeah. I carried you for 9 months. And I'm cooking you for 9 minutes.
That's not nice.
See, that's exactly what I'm saying. I could sit here all afternoon talking about killing my father, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, pointing and laughing. We'll be outside.
Oh, I've got to kill my mother. That's not nice.
You're going to get some mail about that one, Dan.
But my parents don't listen to this podcast very often, but they have listened to it, so
excellent.
It's going to be a cold Thanksgiving.
Wow.
But anyways, I guess if you're predicting an event, that'd be my recommendation, is be sure that the event is flexible enough that you can move it around, and be sure also that you have sufficient control of your plot that the players aren't going to run away from it. And Chad, I think you're right that everything has to be a little vague and abstract, and I think that's not just a good literary tool or storytelling tool. I think that's also good insurance, because the simple fact of the matter is if I have a dream, let's say a guy's going to kill his own father, and I have a dream where a guy is like, to represent him killing his own flesh, is like stabbing himself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if two games into it, they get rid of the father somehow, or something else happens, I can now take that dream, which was kind of vague to begin with, and I can twist that to mean something else.
Yeah.
I can put the guy in a situation where he has to sacrifice on some level to save the party.
Yeah, exactly. But if you have the dream where the guy walks up to his father and stabs him, you know, it's pretty cut and dry what's going to happen. But then three game sessions down the road, you're like, you know, I'm really getting into this character of this guy's father.
Yeah. This guy's awesome.
So yeah, I'd say, yeah, keep it a little bit
abstract. You stab him, but it just stings, and you hug afterwards.
There's a danger of getting so abstract on the far end, though, that by the end of the game, it's all meaningless.
Yeah.
You should still keep it a little bit abstract just for that reason. Chad?
Yes.
A week or two ago, you had said,
I don't remember.
I know. It's through that drug haze of yours.
Indeed.
Thick heroin haze.
Yeah, guy's got to have a hobby.
Besides role playing.
All right, so about a week or two ago, you had asked that we did a subject on in-game fighting. And we're not talking about violent encounters. I'm not talking about you versus the kobolds.
I see player versus player.
Player versus player fighting. And player versus player two ways. It could be in-game character infighting. It could be out-of-game. It could be actual, I hate you because you did X. So, Chad, which one do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about...
Let's just talk about the easy one. Let's talk about player versus player.
Player versus player.
Player versus player or character versus character?
Character versus character.
Okay, that's there what I thought.
The other
the so, other player versus player.
The other player versus
so
player.
So you mean topic one, except completely the opposite. By topic one, you mean topic two. All right, so character versus character. I think this is actually the harder one to tackle. All right, so let's talk about character versus character conflict. And once again, we're not talking here. Let's define the kind of exact thing we're getting at here. We don't mean you have a group of characters that generally get along, but two of them disagree. Or maybe even argue a lot. We're talking about breaking those boundaries such that one of them is now pulling a weapon on the other.
Sounds good to me.
All right,
thanks for listening.
Let's get the two perspectives here, because you and I have pretty different GMing styles. Let's say we're
I like conflict.
I know you
players.
Do.
I like it a lot.
Let's say we're playing a game, and partway through this game, Adam and I's character just hate each other so much, I pull out a gun.
Well, like you guys have been arguing... Like, for the past five gaming sessions,
tension has mounted to this point.
Tension, and you pull a gun out on Adam. I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to know what happens next. I'm not going to stop you. Adam, I'm sorry you didn't draw first.
That's very true.
Roll some dice.
You know, in some ways, though, that's almost... I would disagree with your answer there, but before I get into that, in some ways, though, that's almost too easy of a situation.
Yeah, it is.
Let's give a harder situation where it seems like the whole party's getting along, and then we walk into one place where Adam shoots an elf in the head.
And you are part of Elf Lovers Anonymous.
And I'm part of...
We never knew.
I'm part of, you know... Flower Munchers Anonymous.
Whoa.
And so I like...
cannot comment on this subject further.
And so I'm like, you did what? And I walk up and stab him in the back.
I would pause it then, because like to the point where even the Game Master didn't know that
you were
like...
Yeah, nobody saw this coming.
Oh, I would pause it right there, and I'd be like, what the hell? Wait, what is going on here? You know, and I think everybody would be like, what's going on here?
Well, especially Adam, because he's going to get
Well, let's say it stands. Let's say that it really does make sense with the characters.
Well, and the character explains to you, well, this and this and this are my character background, and I see Lee, and nothing against Adam. And even Adam's like, well, yeah, I can really
see that.
And then I'm like, yeah, I can really see you doing that. I would kind of pause it there, and I'd be like, Adam, there is a possibility that you can die. Dan, there's a possibility that the entire party will gang up on you and give you a ghetto beatdown. Are both of you cool with this outcome? If both of you say, yeah, let's roll with it, I would keep going. It would be interesting.
I guess my concern with this is really the same kind of concern I have with mass player death, which is that, and actually I say this is worse.
Oh, grenades.
The danger this represents to really... the tone of the campaign is so great. Meaning
now,
that,
see, my view is I don't mind changing the tone of my game to accentuate the player's role-playing. If it's a choice between my campaign, not throwing it out the window, mind you, but just changing it,
right,
or dramatic, really cool tension between the players or really dynamic role-playing between the players, I will always choose my players over my campaign. But I need to amend that with, remember, if you listen to the past episodes, my style is very different from Dan.
No,
I am an off-the-cuff, improv sort of game master. So changes in my campaign happen all the time anyway.
That's because you forget where you were going with things.
Pretty much. Now, Dan takes notes, and he works really hard on his campaign. So
I guess part of my thought as well, and once again, this is really a personal taste thing. When I sit down at a game, I'm really interested in seeing where the plot goes and seeing what the game master does. And if the game degrades just into a series of in-party fights, or there's paranoia so thick that you can't get anywhere in the plot, it's kind of like going to see a really, really good movie you want to see and bringing a flashlight and a novel.
That has to do with the game master. Does the game master allow this tension to happen, but keeps a sort of rein on it and keeps the plot going? Because it's about shades of gray and everything.
Right.
You know, it's a balance issue. The infighting takes over to where there is no more plot. That's a bad thing. If the plot takes over to the point to where the players aren't interacting with each other, either conflict or positive things, that's a bad thing as well. You have to balance this.
I think on a personality level also, I'm the type of person that where personally, just me, Dan, I mm-hmm. don't like conflict.
Right, you don't.
And so therefore, I would much rather work with people to defeat the environment or to defeat mm-hmm. the plot than to work against people to defeat each other.
And see, for me, I'm all about the interpersonal relationships right. between the people. And a lot of my plots revolve around the interpersonal relationships the characters have with the NPCs. Now, you two, you haven't talked very much, so I'm pointing at you two.
Well, we don't game master that often.
What do you like to play, though? Which one's better, me or Dan? No, but what do you guys
personal
see?
Personal taste sort
yeah.
of thing, yeah.
What do
well,
you guys
I like the conflict. I think that Dan's concern about the paranoia being so thick, when you get to that point, the game's over. The game was over two games ago. Mm-hmm. If you get to that point where right. it's just constant bickering and fighting. I like
that,
the...
That's happened
the,
with us.
Yeah, the... Recently. yeah. I like the tension building over 6-7 episodes and then finally erupting in this big conflict that ultimately should get resolved.
Yeah.
And then moving on. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Well, I have to slightly agree with Adam. I like there being tension within the group, especially if it's part of the plot. It's like you don't know exactly what's happening and the characters lash out at each other sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that as long as, you know, it's in character.
Right. And as long as the game master can keep a rein on it,
yeah,
keep the game
yeah.
moving. And I
you'll have a situation, it's like everybody's trying to decide what to do, and nobody yeah. knows which is the right decision.
And when we've had our games collapse due to over-conflict, it's always been my fault. It's always been my fault because I get too into it, and I let it go too far. I don't rein it in and pull my
right.
plot forward.
And I think game killing is probably the single greatest threat to it because it just
yeah.
degrades.
That's, I completely agree.
You're spinning mud. But yeah. here's what I think, and I think this, I don't know if this is more or less likely, but in my book, this is what concerns me more, mm-hmm. which is these fighting spills out of the game and into real life. Because now suddenly it is no longer the players playing against the game master who they expect to be at least somewhat adversarial. And I don't think,
right.
I think if you have a situation where your game is players versus the GM, you have a bad game.
I think we can do an entire podcast on that concept, and it would just be a rant.
Yeah, maybe we will. But, you know, having said that, it is still the job of the game master to throw some kind of obstacles in front of the player to make
sure.
life a little hard for them. But,
like 10,000 zombies.
Right, 10,000. Well, you
now,
freaking
now.
Bigot. But
the zombies came to be loved,
yeah,
and the players killed them.
10,000 people show up, it's a party. 10,000 zombies show up, and what is this?
It's an obstacle.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Hafu wants to talk to you.
I bet.
But, you know, if we're in a party where I am just endlessly fighting other people in the party, or there's endlessly the looming threat of a fight, with another
right.
person within the party, that the end result is eventually that spills over into real-life conflicts where I am mad at somebody else, and if they get away with something that I think they should not have been allowed to for character reason or rules mm-hmm. reason, I'm even three times as mad because
yeah.
now the game master's not just killed me, but he's played favorites to kill me, in
well,
my view.
And on the other hand, too, even if it doesn't come out to killing, some people just aren't into that.
Right.
Like, we'll use Tim as the example. Tim does not like arguments. He does not like to get into a fight. He does not like to have an argument or conflict with people, for the most part. And so when he games, he doesn't want to fight with the other players. He doesn't want to have that. He wants to work with
right.
other players. And when that kind of conflict that our group like
thrives
on, he would. I don't think he'd have fun at all.
It depends on the level it goes to, because I know you haven't played with Tim and Mike in a while.
Right.
They bicker endlessly.
Well, that's
Do they bicker or do they argue?
Yeah.
It depends on the... It's a little both.
You haven't gamed with Melina and Chad.
But it never goes...
God.
Never goes to the level of fighting. There's
right.
never guns being pulled or swords being drawn or someone blowing the other guy out the airlock.
Oh, my God. I think... Was it Melina who... No, it was you... who stabbed Katie's character in the throat. Yeah, that was rough.
That's beautiful.
No, that was a great game.
That was a great game.
All right, so let's talk about this.
I
you
wish
guys...
I had a better memory, so I knew exactly what you were talking
about. Oh, my God.
About.
You shoved that sword through her throat to the hilt.
You know, sitting here, there's not a single person sitting around this table that smokes pot.
Right.
Yeah, I swear, this is like the gaming podcast where people do smoke pot. Remember last week? No, man, I don't. Where's the Count Chocula?
Hey, hey, I remember everything.
You just sit there in your haze, and you're like,
whoa.
Dude, that was an
cultist
awesome game.
Floating in a void. Think about it, man.
Yeah, you know what? Whoa.
All right, so is there anything else on character fighting before we move to player fighting?
Character fighting, that we're done with.
You know, my cube mate at work said that he hated pot. Because it was the only drug in the world that made you crave Cheetos more than anything else, yet made you too lazy to reach over for the bag.
I think being fat does the same thing.
That is an accurate description. That's for the fittest man of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I got a story there, too. There was, well, should I tell a story about the tree in the front yard?
I don't remember
you don't,
in the front yard.
Yeah, here we go again.
Dude. What did we even have for dinner tonight?
You know your wife's pregnant, right?
Oh. Damn. Ah. Okay, no cussing.
That's an editing moment. That's an editing opportunity. It's a chance for you to practice edit silence.
Yes.
Okay, player versus player fighting.
Yes.
And this, I think, bridges kind of well out of the issue of you can have character fighting hit the point where the players begin to fight, which is, I think, the biggest fear I have of it.
And we've had that happen before.
And
yeah, we've had
before we talk about the other angle, which is player fighting spilling over into the game, let's talk about that first direction. Game fighting spills over to the players.
I think it's great because the tension is so real, it becomes real.
I hate it.
Yeah, I hate it too. It's pretty awful.
I hate it because I have to mediate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it rarely stops
and
at the
game. You
know
what? It's so stupid, too, because you're not even arguing over anything real. You're arguing over something that you're mad at in the moment, and then when you stop being mad about it, it completely evaporates because it's not real.
I guess. Well, I mean, which is true, but this also, you come to a role-playing game for an experience. And
right.
If someone has cheated you or I guess you can be angry the same reason you'd be angry about going to the baseball game or football game, and there's a guy in front of you with a 10-gallon hat on. That, you know, yeah, the game, who wins the football game or baseball game doesn't matter. Your ability to see it doesn't matter. But what they've done is cheated you out of an experience, cheated you out of enjoyment. And if I went to a game and someone, you know, we had some big fight character to character that blew up into player versus player, especially if there was some kind of perceived GM favoritism or something that figured in there, my biggest outrage would be, you just robbed me of an experience, a character I liked, a game I liked. You know, now I have to come back to the next game with a different character. I'm going to come in super defensive, ready to murder this other person for no particular
reason. Oh,
good.
You're getting ready for the next game. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I hear what you're saying, yeah. And like I said, we've had that before, and it is not fun. Does that mean that
we
shouldn't...
Well, let me ask you something, because you've admitted kind of two things over the course of the conversation. One is that you enjoy how this plays out,
yes.
But you also do recognize the dangers.
Yes.
Okay, my way of handling this is simple. I force a group template where the characters don't have to be bosom buddies. I allow disagreements and differences, but I have to say that you guys have to like each other enough to at least not draw guns. And if they do that, I basically say, look, you know, I'm going to side with the person you're drawing against because I don't want this kind of fighting. Mm-hmm. But in your game, you allow, I wouldn't say you quite encourage, but you definitely nudge along that kind of thing. How do you keep it from going that far? What's some advice you can give to someone who wants to play that style without the fights?
Strong NPCs. And I don't mean strong as in, oh, this guy has an 18-0-0 strength, and if these two guys fight, he grabs them by the collar and... separates
them. Throws
them. Yeah. No, I mean like...
So basically just an antagonist that will actually draw their attention away from their...
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, an NPC, not necessarily an antagonist, but an NPC who is a strong character that over the course of games, the players have liked. They've grown to like and kind of cheer on this NPC. It's their favorite NPC.
You know what? I've seen you do this the other way, too.
Yeah.
Like, I have a problem with Phil. And I'm really going after Phil, and then you bring up some guy that just the things that you do to needle me with this guy, completely forget about Phil.
I can see
this
working
guy.
Yep. It's like I'm drawing my gun to shoot somebody else, and right before I pull the trigger, the door bursts open, and a powered armor wearing cyborg with a minigun on each arm comes stomping into the room, spraying bullets at all of us. And
yeah, now imagine that same guy coming into the room, only he's not a cyborg, no power armor, no guns, but everybody hates him. And I have spent 5 to 6 games cultivating this deep-seated hatred in the party.
You have no idea how it unifies a party.
Every game, every time.
But is it a lasting unity?
Yes. We still hate him.
Oh, yeah. Because the character never dies. We never get the upper hand on this character.
These guys.
I'm getting pissed about this.
My games are going to be very different, because I'll let you kill anyone.
No.
It wasn't
that. I let him kill him.
It wasn't that.
If they pull a gun on him and pull the trigger, fine. Perfectly acceptable.
Too simple for me.
I will not stop. Yep. They hate him on an intellectual level.
It's true.
To pull the trigger would be to go down to this character's level.
You guys need to read more on the French Revolution, where killing people you would disagree with intellectually was an acceptable way of resolving a dispute.
See, the guys I make hate him, or that they hate, they can't 100% disagree with the logic of where these guys are coming from.
Right.
It's more like they agree with what they're doing, they don't agree with their methods, or something
like
that.
I guess you could also take this from a positive standpoint, that if you've cultivated a character they really like, that they're all fighting, and then a character can come in and say, wait a minute, do you realize what you guys are doing?
Right, and I do that. I use both
If you keep fighting, the terrorists win.
That guy, though, doesn't there's no emotional attachment to that guy. Like, I'm getting angry sitting in this chair thinking about these characters in the past that have just used me.
Oh, my God.
Adam has only a capacity for hate.
I do.
So is that your best advice, really, is to kind of make these cliffhanger interventions?
Dawn told me one time that at the end of one game, you're voted off of Cliffhanger Island.
Okay, fair enough.
Whoa.
All right, so let's
I'm moving my mic.
So let's go to the other type then.
Mm-hmm.
Players that hate each other or angry at each other for reasons that have nothing to do with the game, but it's spilling over into the game or derailing the game.
That's just like dumb. Adam egged Dawn's car because he thought it was funny. Dawn's really pissed about that. Then we sit down to game.
And then Dawn kills me.
And then Dawn's like, yeah, I'm going to shoot you now.
Yeah.
Just out of the way.
And maybe even something far more serious than that, but we'll take that.
No, at that point, you stop the game. You stop the game and you're just like,
you guys need to go into a room and we'll lock the door and leave you alone.
I agree with you. Gaming is like going to the shooting range. This is a hobby you do with people you like and trust.
And who aren't angry, or don't have, like, high blood pressure.
Right. Or not frothy at the mouth, don't hate you. And I agree with you, because gaming's like,
I just had this awful day at work, goddammit. Let's go to the shooting range. Let's not. Let's go watch Bambi.
Let's go to the bookstore.
Let's go to that petting zoo. But yeah, I agree with you.
Will relax you.
I think when you sit down in a role-playing game, you have to have people that are friends, people that trust each other, people that like each other. If you've got a fight or a rivalry that's going on outside of the game, you've got to deal with that outside of the game. You've got to say, look, guys, we're not going to game tonight. We're going to play pass the pillow and talk about the problem.
You know what? The important thing is you have to deal with it. Even if it's not overtly spilling over into the game, but there's just drama.
No, it does. It spills over.
It does spill over.
It does.
It's not overt, but it's there, and it's a problem.
Yeah, you have to deal with it, because I remember reading on the forums several people where they talk about, oh, I started gaming when I was this many years old, and I played this game, and these are the groups I played with. And
How many of those groups are the same?
Yeah. Multiple people are like, yeah, and I played with these guys, and then somebody got a girlfriend, and everybody got pissed off, and then I played with these guys, and there was this drama. You know, you deal with the drama first.
Right.
And then you go into
this is honestly even true with kind of latent rivalries. Talking about how Mike and Tim bicker a lot in the game. And I'm not going to get into their personal lives, but this is an issue that somewhat stems from things outside of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're friends. They don't hate each other. No. It's not like that. But still, before the games, one of the things I have to look at, are the characters they're playing going to exacerbate the problem?
Right.
And I typically have to do things like make them play brothers.
If there's a hierarchy in command, which one of them gets to be captain?
Exactly.
Because it's one or the other, and the best way would be to have both be the captain, but that can't happen.
Just like in marriage, that doesn't work. Adam at feartheboot.com.
Why do I get all the anti-marriage comment mail?
And the furry porn mail, too.
Yeah, has anyone ever sent you furry porn?
We keep asking people to send it to you.
Not that I'm going to disclose on this podcast.
Ooh.
So that's a yes.
Enticing, eh?
So, anyway.
Yeah, my furry porn has completely derailed you, has it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
And you're the man with the cat dislike.
Okay. Yeah, I am, actually. But as I was saying, I was, you know, you've got to sit down with that before the game. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I try and make sure that those two in particular have a very tight bond. They're business partners. They're brothers. They're best friends or something. So when they come into the game, they are already role-playing how much they like each other. So it's like horse blinders. They just don't immediately see all these easy opportunities to fight and bicker in the game.
Do they eventually degrade and start?
Yeah, oh, inevitably. Carla's out right now to dinner. If she was here, I'd make her come downstairs and tell you about, because she's here when we, you know, we would game over here. And so,
damn it, Tim!
I can hear it.
It is. It's precious. If you guys are ever in a game with them, it's precious.
We have those kind
of... I almost wish that you had some recordings. I'd like to hear Mike going off.
We have. Oh, please, come on. Somebody requested that we start recording our game sessions. Oh. I'm like, no,
somebody
no,
requested
no.
the 10-hour-long podcast.
Okay, speaking of sidetracking to that real quick, and it's probably about time to wrap the episode up, but sidetracking that real quick, I've had actually a surprising number of people ask us to record a game session. So I think I'm serious.
That looks like the face of, you know, I'm seriously considering this request.
Well, yeah. Here's what I'm thinking.
Did you know,
we're
going to have to do it while none of us know, otherwise it won't
Adam
be natural.
Adam recorded our character creation session one time.
Really?
Yeah, about a year ago.
Yeah, do you still have that?
No, the hard drives disintegrated.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
all right, well, here's what I'm thinking about doing eventually. This is not going to be right now, but sometime after Archon, I'm thinking that we could sit down, record like a little bit of a game session, not a huge portion, like an hour or two, put it up there as like a bonus episode. Like
double bonus! Score!
Download this monster at your own risk. Just because I have had
Don't put it up on the aggregators.
But I mean, yeah, you can. It will blow our content rating.
That's true.
If you think about it, I mean, I guess in a way, it kind of makes sense because we do this whole show about how to do role-playing games. So it'd be interesting, I guess, to see how we actually use all this stuff we talk about.
I don't know.
So, but, you know, I'm with you. I didn't think people would really care, but when I put the question out there, I got a fair amount of feedback saying people
I think
did want something like that.
We're taking
it from
the perspective, would we want to hear anyone else's role-playing game?
Yeah, and the answer is
no.
No.
But you know what? We've been surprised before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess it's really not even because I think no one has better games than we do. It's just, I don't really. I'm just not, it's I don't know. To me, it's like you said, role-playing's not a spectator sport.
Right.
If
right.
I walk up to a table at a con and somebody's playing a good role-playing game, which I wouldn't walk up to a table at a con, but if I did...
Oh, you're going to in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're there for. But I would want to grab a character and jump in, you know, not sit there and watch. But I don't know. I guess we'll go ahead and do that, so...
Maybe.
Oh.
Anywho, that's enough for this episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. Take care, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.